Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
City likely to drop TIRZ-STA contract. The Odessa City Council will discuss the dissolution of the TIRZ buying the city a fuel system and terminating a contract with an insurance broker Tuesday. A tax increment reinvestment zone is a special zone created by the City Council in 2019 to attract new investment in an area. The taxes paid into the zone by Medical Center Hospital, Odessa College, and the City of Odessa are supposed to be used to finance public improvements downtown. The board is comprised of 6 council appointees and 3 appointees selected by MCHOC and the City of Odessa. In recent months, Mayor Javier Hoven and other council members have made it clear they are not happy with the TIRZ. They declined to ratify the board's reappointment of Craig Stoker as the chairman of the board, and in May they asked Stoker to come before the council to discuss the board's projects. Since the TIRZ was formed, Stoker told the council, it has raised roughly $500,000. There's about $330,000 in the bank right now, and the rest was spent on updating the downtown master plan, rehabbing parking lots at 4th Street and Grant Avenue, and replacing 12 flower pots along Grant. On Saturday, Stoker said he wasn't exactly surprised to see the dissolution of the city's agenda, but he would like someone to have the courtesy to inform him ahead of time. The TIRZ is expected to bring in $9 million during the next 20 years, but there have been misunderstandings from the beginning about where the board could spend the money, Stoker said. The first year we didn't have any money, and the mayor made it very, very clear we were never going to borrow against the TIRZ, and that seems to be the failing, because if you could have borrowed the $9 million, we would have had the money to do impactful projects, Stoker said. So from the onset, we were hamstrung. We've got to wait for the money to come in, and we've only ever are going to get it in small bites, so we've had to do things that fit into those budgets. During the May meeting, TIRZ board member Wallace Dunn told the council the hospital would vote in favor of disbanding the TIRZ if asked. Although the hospital is in the downtown area, it hasn't benefited from it at all, he said. The flower pots mentioned by Stoker stopped 2 blocks short of the hospital. TIRZ Vice President Jeff Russell and the mayor both expressed their disgust that money was spent updating the 2016 downtown master plan, saying the updated plan merely regurgitated the old one. On Saturday, Stoker said in hindsight he might not have pushed for the updated master plan, but he'd received no direction from city staff. I asked at every meeting, help me, help me, help me, nothing. So we wind up with a master plan done. Hire the engineer. We're mad about that. Now we fire the engineer, and we're still dead in the water. Let's just kill the TIRZ, Stoker said. Stoker was referring to the City Council's unanimous May vote to terminate the $650,000 contract with KDC Associates, the landscape architect hired in November to design and oversee a downtown entertainment district that was supposed to be paid for with a portion of a $93 million certificate of obligation passed by the council in August 2019. Hoven and council members Denise Swanner and Mark Mata had voted against the KDC contract to begin with because of the amount and the details of the plan, KDC wanted to spend $7 million focusing on a two-block section of Jackson Avenue. KDC chose Jackson Avenue over Texas Avenue, at least in part because the two-year project would have a detrimental impact on traffic and parking along Texas Avenue, and Jackson Avenue is closer to the Marriott and Odessa College's new plaza. Hovind insists the downtown Festival Street was never discussed when the Certificate of Obligation was passed. When Hovind voted to fire KDC associates, he complained about the delays on the downtown project and the size of the project, but he also spent considerable time accusing founder Kelly Cook of not following the chain of command. Cook told the council he'd been asked by then-downtown Odessa Executive Director Casey Hallmark to pause his work on the project in January, and he had done so. Hovind accused Cook of dropping the ball by not conferring with then-interim city manager Agapito Bernal before following Hallmark's directions. Cook insisted he'd followed the same chain of commands he's been following for more than 30 years and reached out to then-assistant city manager Aaron Smith about the situation. In an interview after the meeting, Cook said his firm would never again submit bids on city projects because of the way he was treated. Since the November vote to hire KDC, three new council members were elected and all but one of the committee members, Stoker, have left. In other entities or departments take on downtown projects, why haven't they? Stoker asked Saturday. I can't figure it out, other than a lack of support for downtown, why you would want to stop a funding mechanism that is completely designed to do what we need in downtown, Stoker said. He's been working on a project with Keep Odessa Beautiful to put trash cans on every corner in downtown, but with the TIRZ, it probably won't get done, Stoker said. Look at other TIRZ boards. Waco has a TIRZ since 1977. These things don't happen quickly, but look at downtown Waco. Isn't that something we'd be proud of? Uptown Dallas is a TIRZ. The Star and Cowboy headquarters in Frisco is a TIRZ. STA benefits. The City Council will also discuss terminating the contract of STA Benefits Tuesday, a company at the heart of state bar complaints filed against former city attorney Natasha Brooks and the focus of many discussions for the past 2 years. Its contract is due to expire December 13th. For the past 3 decades, STA Benefits has been shopping around for group life insurance, AD&D coverage, and retiree life insurance on behalf of the city. Initially, the company was owned by Steve Thompson, who later became a city council member. The company is now owned by his son, Marty. Thompson maintains that in December 2020 and December 2021, he abstained from taking part in the discussion and votes renewing STA Benefits contract. But Odessa Development Corporation board members Chris Crow in February 2022 demanded Thompson resign because the Texas Secretary of State listed Thompson as the president of the company. Crow further alleges the minutes of the December 2020 meeting were altered and Thompson did cast a vote. It's also been alleged STA Benefits received six figures as a result of the December 2020 and December 2021 votes, but Thompson said STA Benefits only receives $30,000 annually as a result of its contract with the city. Earlier this year, Hovind and Swanner filed a state bar complaint months after Brooks's December termination, alleging they discovered Brooks had staff members backdate the conflict of interest forms Thompson had signed regarding STA Benefits. No disciplinary action has been taken against Brooks to date, and she now represents Iowa City, Iowa. Thompson has said He was told it was okay to sign the backdated documents because he had informed then-city manager Michael Marrero about his association with STA Benefits in January. Crow again voiced concerns about STA Benefits in January. Without mentioning Thompson's name, Crow told the STA Benefits had been the city insurance broker for 29 years and the job hasn't been put up for bid in all those years. Other matters. In other action, the council will approve the articles of incorporation for the Amy Bell Sports Foundation. Larry Bell and his family have donated 100 acres to the city so it can build a $50 million sports complex in the Parks Bell Ranch area north of Fadre Road. The 80,000 to 100,000 square foot complex will feature 20 volleyball courts, 10 basketball courts, and a track, plus 8 to 12 multi-purpose fields for soccer, football, and lacrosse, and up to 8 baseball-softball fields. The only thing the Bell family asked in return was for a 5-acre park to be included in the project that will be dedicated to Amy Doris Bell, who died at the age of 33 in May 2014. In addition, the City Council will discuss signing a pre-development agreement with Rad Sports to survey and perform an environmental assessment on the land for the sports complex. In addition, the company, which is a partner of Synergy Sports, would do design and development work for the park. Fuel. During the city's work session at 3 p.m., Equipment Services Director Chris Adams will ask the City Council to discuss bringing fuel back under the control of the city. According to materials provided to the council, Adams would like the city to either spend roughly $730,000 to buy a fuel master system and tanks or purchase fuel through a vendor and spend 10 cents a gallon to cover the cost of the equipment. Under the first option, Adams said the city would save more than $468,000 over last year. If they went with the second option, the savings would be more than $410,000, he said. Adams indicated he'd like to have 2 10,000-gallon tanks at the city's pool road facilities and place other tanks at 3 strategic locations elsewhere in the city. He also proposes putting 2 500-gallon tanks at Ratliff Links. By making the change, Adams said he thinks the city would not only save a significant amount of money, but it could cut down on theft and misuse. Others would have to use cards, fobs, or user codes to access the fuel. Tall City Blues Fest to take place next month. The best little fest in Texas is around the corner. The Tall City Blues will take place on September 23rd at the Old Lumber Yard at the Destination Midland. People can purchase $20 early bird tickets before the prices go up on August 21st. Tickets purchased after August 20th will be $25, and tickets at the door and online the day of the fest will be $30. Get ready for the most fun in Midland, where you can see 6 back-to-back concerts. Grab tasty grub, shop our vendor marketplace, and browse art. Sponsorships are available. Identity of Cordarius discovered. Midland police discovered the identity of the individual known as Cordarius. The ongoing investigation revealed the individual as 24-year-old Cordarius Lashin Pegues of Midland, according to a City of Midland news release issued Monday. Charlotte Latasha Pegues of Midland, 47, the mother of Cordarius, was arrested today for exploitation of a disabled individual, the release said. the citizens of Midland, along with the abundance of concern for Cordarius nationwide, assisted officials involved with the case in identifying Cordarius. Officials with the City of Midland, the Midland Police Department, and all agencies involved would like to thank everyone for their overwhelming support and help. A special thank you to the news media in helping to elevate the story of Cordarius to a national level, the release said. The investigation continues. MPD makes arrest months after special needs child found. 7 months after a special needs child was found near Ward Street and Shandon Avenue in Midland, authorities now know the young man's full name, his age, the name of his mother, and where he's from. According to the City of Midland, Cordarius is 24 and he's from Midland. His mother, Charlotte Latasha Pegues, 47, is now in jail. She's been arrested on suspicion of exploitation of a disabled individual, a third-degree felony punishable by 2 to 10 years in prison. Cordarius, who is nonverbal, was found January 29th wearing a pink helmet. Authorities thought he probably found while wandering around. They thought the dirty, disheveled young man was 13 to 17 years of age. For months, they've been trying to figure out who he is, where he's from, and who his family members are. One of the only clues they had was the name Cordarius, which the young man kept writing over and over again. Authorities placed Cordarius in the care of Child Protective Services, took DNA samples and his fingerprints, and spent months looking into leads and waiting for a DNA hit. On August 3rd, the Midland Police Department sent out a news release with an update on Cordarius. They said he was a very joyful child who loves to swim, play basketball, and attend church with his caregivers. They said he is going to school and getting speech, physical, and occupational therapy. It wasn't immediately clear how they came to identify his mother, but city officials said she too is from Midland. Officials with the City of Midland and the Midland Police Department and all agencies involved would like to thank everyone for their overwhelming support and help. A special thank you to the news media in helping to elevate the story of Cordarius to a national level, a news release stated. The investigation is ongoing.
Cates. Drug overdoses in 2022 hit record highs by Carol Cates, August 21, 2023. When I was a young nurse working in the emergency department and I heard about a person who had died or was unconscious, my first thought was always trauma, things like car wrecks, falls from a height, and motorcycle accidents. As much as I hate trauma, I wish that was where my mind still went. But it's not. Now when I hear about a person who has died or is unconscious, the first thought is drug overdose. Drug overdoses are becoming far, far too common. In 2022, nearly 110,000 people died from drug overdose in the United States. That is more deaths related to drug overdose than any other year since we started tracking it as a cause of death. The change in my thought process regarding unconscious people has been driven by that increase in overdose deaths and because of the way we are now expected to react as healthcare providers because of that increase. It is now standard of care when someone is found unconscious that we are not 100% sure why we give the antidote for opiate overdoses, Narcan, immediately. I can say how very sad it makes me that to do everything possible to save someone's life, we must include treatments for overdose even when we have no reason to suspect drug use. The 110,000 deaths in 2022 is not only the scary statistic when it comes to drug overdose. In a recent survey by the Kaiser Family Foundation, or KFF, more than 25% of respondents stated that they or a family member have been addicted to prescription painkillers or other illegal opioid drugs. The same survey found that 1 in 10 people has had a family member die of drug overdose. The main culprit, according to the experts, in the long number of drug overdose deaths is fentanyl. Fentanyl and other synthetic opioids account for more than 2/3 of the overdose deaths in 2022. I don't know if the average person truly understands how powerful of an opioid fentanyl is. Most of the drugs that we take normally are dosed in milligrams. For instance, an extra-strength tablet of acetaminophen or Tylenol is 500 milligrams. There are 1,000 milligrams in a gram. A standard paperclip weighs about a gram. That means 500 milligrams is about half of a paperclip in size. I can see that, I can hold that in my hand, and I can pair it to other things. But fentanyl isn't like that. In hospitals, because it is so very powerful, fentanyl is not dosed in milligrams. It's dosed in micrograms. A microgram is 1/1,000,000th of a gram. A common dose of fentanyl is about 100 micrograms. Essentially, that equates to cutting that 1 gram paperclip into 100,000 pieces and picking out just one of those pieces. There is no way that you could see that or hold that in your hand. In hospitals, there are multiple safety layers from the manufacturers to the way we administer fentanyl to make sure we are giving those very tiny amounts accurately and safely. But when fentanyl is gotten from illegal sources, those safety measures don't exist, and there is no way to know if a person thinks they are taking is really what they're getting. That is a big part of why fentanyl causes overdoses so easily. Add into the problem that fentanyl is getting mixed into other drugs, we're also seeing overdoses in people who had no idea they were even taking fentanyl. The KFF survey also asked about concerns regarding substance abuse and addiction. 1/3 of the respondents stated that they are worried someone in their family will overdose on opioids, and 40% are worried that someone in their family will unintentionally consume fentanyl. 2/3 of its respondents say that they have had someone in their family who was addicted to drugs or alcohol, has experienced homelessness due to addiction, or experienced a drug overdose that led to an emergency department visit, hospitalization, or death. The respondents who said they had experienced addiction in their family also stated that addiction had major impacts on their mental health, relationships within the family, and on the family's finances. I don't have the answers to the drug overdose problem. It's a huge national problem with a massive number of issues that contribute. What I do know is that this is not a them problem. This is an us problem. Every single person has a distinct possibility to having a substance abuse and addiction problem among their loved ones. We have an absolute obligation to talk to our loved ones about the dangers of drugs and substance abuse. We must work on a healthy ways to cope in times of stress, and we can't hold stigmas about mental health that force people to self-medicate with street drugs rather than getting treatment. We must, because with some of these drugs, like fentanyl, all it takes is one try, one experiment, one bad decision, and the person is addicted or they are dead. I also encourage everyone possible to carry Narcan, an antidote to opiates. The sooner a person has overdosed on an opiate, receives Narcan, the less likely they are to die or have severe complications from that overdose. Narcan is now available over-the-counter as a nasal spray, so it is easy to get and easy to give if you suspect an overdose. CVS and Walgreens both advertise they have Narcan in stock, and I'm sure other pharmacies carry as well. Also, advising that you check with your insurance carrier to see if they help cover the cost of Narcan. I like to think of Narcan like a fire extinguisher. You never want to use one, but you always want to have one around because having it can save a life.
This is the Dear Abby column. Parent tired of hosting the neighborhood bully. Dear Abby, my daughter is the youngest kid in the neighborhood, and a girl up the street treats her horribly. She calls her a baby, tells her she's not a person, and sends her home when everybody plays at her house. The other kids are friendly with my daughter, and when they come to play at our house, the mean girl comes too. She's never mean to my daughter when I'm around, but I don't think it's right to let her enjoy our pool and games when she won't let my daughter play at her house. How do I ask her to leave without seeming like a bully, while allowing the other kids to stay and play? The other mother is of no help. Signed, Wants the Bully to Leave. Dear Wants the Bully to Leave, I assume the other mother is aware that her daughter refuses to allow your daughter to play at her house with the other kids. Because she hasn't intervened, the ball is in your court. Teach your daughter a lesson in assertiveness. The next time the bully shows up, your daughter should tell the girl she is not welcome, and why. Dear Abby, We made plans on Sunday to get together with a couple the following Friday. We do this regularly. An hour before, I texted to be sure we were still on. I didn't receive an immediate reply. A half hour later, I called and was told, yes. I replied, great. See you soon. 5 minutes later, she texted me to say they were going out to dinner because friends from out of state had surprised them, and maybe tomorrow we can get together. We are very disappointed in our close friends who made plans with us but changed their minds. Are we wrong to feel hurt? We could have changed our plans because some out-of-state friends showed up, but we didn't. Signed, Hurt on the East Coast. Dear Hurt, I understand your feelings, but I hope you won't nurse a grudge. Your friends made a snap decision on the spur of the moment, which unfortunately lacked tact. It might have been better if, when these out-of-state friends appeared on their doorstep, the couple had contacted you and asked if they could bring the people along. They dropped the ball. Forgive them. This time. Dear Abby, what does it mean when our daughter's mother-in-law refuses to call my husband and me by our first names? In fact, she doesn't call us anything. I bend over backward to be hospitable and treat her the way we want to be treated. Signed, Nameless in the East. Dear Nameless, how does she address you? Mr. and Mrs., hey you, dear or sweetie? Have you told her this bothers you? It may mean she doesn't particularly like either of you, and this is her way of distancing. It could also mean that she can't remember what your names are. You can't go wrong if you continue treating her as you want to be treated, and try harder not to take this so personally. You can contact Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.